Welcome to Conversations in Cannabis, an MRR podcast. Today's episode features Nishant Reddy, founder and CEO at California-based A Golden State. This episode was recorded in person in Marina Del Rey, California, on October 4th, 2019.
Tell me originally kind of your start in the cannabis industry, kind of what brought you to the industry, where the passion comes from, and what your aspirations were when you first started.
Yeah, so I mean, I've been using cannabis for a long time now. I mean, I definitely remember my first time trying cannabis my freshman year, or like my very first week of freshman year of high school, to like, you know, the greater part of high school, college, using it, you know, entirely recreationally, right? Like just for fun. After college, was working on Wall Street and private equity and investment banking, and you know, had played college sports, was already very much into health and wellness, and really was not into drinking. And you know, like we were just talking about New York. New York is very much, you know, it's work hard, play hard, right? People burn it on both ends, and that just wasn't what I wanted to do. Like, I didn't just want to drink alcohol and feel like shit all the time. And I had to work really hard. You know, my work weeks were 100 hours consistently for a decade. And so I started using cannabis, you know, at the end of the week, really as a therapeutic way to, like, take the edge off, relax, order in some really good food. You know, at the time I didn't even know, but it was, you know, helping me with insomnia, anxiety, all of these things. I'd wake up fresh the next day on a Saturday, not be hungover, could get a great workout, and, like, just start the day feeling great. And it never really got in the way of my productivity at work. And then the more I started researching and understanding how to dose myself in strains, I really started understanding, like, how this actually was helping me medicinally. Like, this had so much more potential than just getting high, if you will, right? So, you know, that really led me to start experimenting, testing, learning, researching cannabinoids, all of this stuff, ways things are grown, what's going into them. And then, like, the light bulbs really started going off. You know, it really was like, wow, like, there's no way I'm the only person who's doing this or will benefit from this, right? And that was really, you know, at the cusp of when Colorado had started talking about, like, legalization and things like that. And, you know, at the time I was working for myself, I had started a real estate development company, and I was connected through a large dispensary group here in San Francisco, and they needed private placement financing. You know, there's no federal lending in cannabis even today. And so I helped secure them a loan, you know, $1 million+. And then, you know, through that, they asked me to come on as an interim COO, which I did. And, you know, I was really assisting them as an iBanker, if you will, helping them navigate, you know, do you open more dispensaries? Do you open distribution? Do you need another greenhouse? Like, how do you really grow this business? And at the time, in California, everything was MRSA, right? It was medical days. So you had to be a 501(c) nonprofit. So there was only so much money they could take off of the table. So it was critical in how you navigate that and how do you make the business scale at that point. And so that really led me to understand and see the inner workings of a cannabis business, you know, an early days dispensary chain, and be like, wow, like, these are real numbers, and these guys came from the black market. You know, they weren't, you know, sophisticated in the traditional sense. They didn't grow up in business or on Wall Street. You know, they kind of stumbled upon this by taking a chance and really built something, you know, organically, like a large mom and pop, if you will. And then I was like, this is a real business, you know, like, especially as an East Coaster new to this, it was that this is a real business here in California. Like, they have a license, they pay taxes, you know, it's not what people say where the feds are raiding them and things like that. Like, yes, that risk was real, but you could also do it in a way that was above board, right? And that's what these guys had built, a really, really sophisticated dispensary. And, you know, today you hear people talk about the Apple of cannabis and stuff like that. This was being done, like, years ago. That's what people don't understand. Like, they were already innovators 6-7 years ago who were the true apple of cannabis, if you will, right? And I was lucky to start working with them. With that experience, you know, I was less bullish on brick and mortar retail. You know, I saw the margins, I understood the business well, and what really got me going was cultivation and distribution. And so I pursued licensing in Oregon right when they were thinking about going rec legal. I had a background in real estate development and real estate finance, so I started building cultivations. I recruited a team of cultivators to help me with that process. You know, we had some really great properties and opportunities in Southern Oregon. And then unfortunately what happened and what you see in so many states is that there's a disconnect between the bureaucracy and then the cannabis industry. And, you know, as we all know today, Oregon was issuing licenses left and right and not really understanding the elasticity of the market, the true supply and demand, and what would happen as a result. And today you see things like 1 million pounds of excess cannabis in the metric system, right? It's crazy. And so I saw those signs early on, and I had the foundational background from iBanking and things to recognize them. And so I sold all of our businesses early on. I was living in Los Angeles, and you know, I had the epiphany that I didn't want to focus on these smaller states that were trying to do it. I wholeheartedly believed sooner or later California would legalize, and when it did, it would be the largest market in the world, and it is. So I came back to California. I launched Satya Capital to be a cannabis-focused venture fund. I went and got a degree in cultivation. I started pursuing a degree in horticulture. And so I needed and wanted to learn every element of cannabis from the ground up so I truly could be a granular operator, not these financiers, if you will, that just want to jump into cannabis and try to make a lot of money and don't really understand anything about cannabis, right? So over the last several years, you know, my partner Simone Saroff joined me, and we started building businesses one by one. So we've built cultivations from the ground up. By the end of this year, we'll be in about close to 65,000 square feet of indoor cultivation. We're the only fully hydroelectric cultivation operation in the state. We use all proprietary genetics. You know, sustainable packaging. We've built a distribution company. We'll have retail under our belt. We're hugely dedicated to social justice. You know, we're a minority-owned cannabis company, right? As a brown male in this industry who's been in the industry for a long time, I am truly passionate about, like, recognizing the people that have been unfairly prosecuted, you know, and, like, I've been racially profiled, and so although I've been fortunate to grow up a certain way, I'm sensitive to the other people that have been hurt by this industry. So it's really important for me that we do the right thing, you know. And as well as that, so we've invested in alternative energy. We have things like in our multi-state expansion plan where 10% of our workforce is rehabilitated ex-convicts. You know, we invest in vocational training so people can participate in cannabis, not just in touch the plant businesses, but like HVAC training, security training, things like that. And then now all of these companies roll up to Satya Capital. And in Satya Capital, we're raising our venture fund right now, a $75 million venture fund to continue to expand our current companies, our portfolio of brands, including a Golden State, as well as work on things like multi-state expansion, and then starting to find other opportunities, other operators we really respect, our technology, software platforms, hardware, things that we really like, and we want to help other people come up in the industry like we did.
Well, when you're looking, I mean, coming from such an analytical and statistical background and looking at the industry now, obviously when the industry first started, pre-215 days, black market going to 215 days, gray area operation, now it's a fully legal market. Like, has it surprised you kind of how much the industry has kind of adopted data in terms of genetics, in terms of operating like MSOs? Like, has that kind of like...
No, I don't think it surprised me at all, because there's a lot of really smart guys in the industry. And I think for me, that's what's really cool about it, because, you know, in traditional finance, you're kind of dealing with a lot of egos and a lot of D-bags, if you will. And, you know, in cannabis, I don't think you need to be that way. You know, it's so new, and, you know, there obviously are people like that, but you don't have to work with them. And I'm fortunate, and I love meeting just so many smart, creative, entrepreneurial people. And they come from all walks of life, and so they get it, and they're doing really cool stuff. They understand things, like you said, the importance of data, the importance of analytics, the importance of branding, marketing, understanding consumer trends. But inevitably, you have a lot of people that don't get that, and they're still very much stuck in the old ways, and, you know, they're trying to sell, you know, couple packs legally and then a lot more packs illegally, not pay taxes. And, you know, we don't get caught up in that. You know, we're focused on the long game, and, You know, for me, I'm really focused on, this is a tremendous opportunity, right? Like, this is a once in a lifetime opportunity. It's far greater than making money. Like, this is about doing good social justice. Like, you know, this country needs reinvestment into infrastructure, public schools, and cannabis, in my mind, is that gateway. Like, this is what it can lead. So I like seeing smart guys in the space, and I want to work with them. I want to meet them. I want to figure out how we can collaborate, you know?
Well, as far as genetics go, I mean, you're collaborating is amazing. A lot of people are doing that, but proprietary genetics is only something only a few companies right now are doing. What made you want to go more proprietary versus, say, just growing a Jack Herrera Dream? Like, what was the thought process behind creating those?
So I personally love Blue Dream. It's one of my favorite strains. But, you know, I think if you're going to smoke Blue Dream, find the very best Blue Dream. And that means understanding the genetics, understanding the legacy of where that plant came from, and not just buying a pack of seeds from some unknown guy and just growing it, because now there's already a disconnect in the accountability in that supply chain. Now, when you take that and then you take it all the way to plant, to flower, to curation, to customer, there's zero accountability. And now that customer who's buying it, trusting you, they don't know anything about that plant. They don't know, you know, and if you take that even one step deeper, you know, pest management, strength of plant, fitness, there's so many variables, right? And so for us to really build a business, right, we got in this game and the first thing we wanted to do was build a brand that we were proud to use ourselves. And in order to do that, we had to control the supply chain, and the supply chain starts with genetics, right? And so the only way we could control that is we needed to have our own nursery, we needed to have our own seed bank, and we had to have the knowledge and skill base to do all of our own genetic testing and propagation. And that is the very first step to control the supply chain and to be able to consistently give customers what they're looking for, and to be able to hold your organization accountable to that customer's experience.
Well, and genetics are 50% of the equation. Mm-hmm. The TLC that you put into the grow is kind of the other 50%. A Golden State is focused on quality, obviously. Mm-hmm. Having the highest grades, cannabis flower, that I saw at Hall Flowers. When you're looking at maintaining that high quality versus doing quick turnarounds, when you're growing like that, like, what made you want to do that versus just growing Sea of Green and saying, screw it?
For sure. So, you know, first of all, thank you. You know, it's super kind of you, and, you know, we love hearing stuff like that because you're obviously a connoisseur, and, you know, if a connoisseur is giving you a compliment like that, then we're succeeding, right? The fundamental thing is I'm a consumer. I'm a connoisseur. You know, I want to use my own product, right? And I care about what I smoke, right? And so the luxury of that is then I want to be able to pass that on to everybody else so that they have that very same experience. And I hold myself to the level that if we're not doing that, then I personally am failing as a founder, right? And I will never cut corners and chase margins or profit, because that's not why I got into this, right? Like, if I wanted to do that, I would have stayed in Wall Street, you know? So, you know, for us, you know, building a cultivation, owning our infrastructure and supply chain, that's the building block, right? So by the end of this year, we'll be doing over 12,000 pounds of flower. All of that's AAA indoor flower. Now, that can go to any brand we own. Obviously, the exotics, the really, really, really high-end stuff goes exclusively into Golden State. But then we're going to be launching subsequent brand after brand after brand, so that, you look, I believe that everybody should be able to access premium cannabis. You don't have to be able to only spend $70 or $80, right? A Golden State is priced the way it is because of all the unique things it takes to create a Golden State. But we can also do it with less complicated strains, you know, strains that we can grow easily, get high yields, and still take to the market the very best Blue Dream that anyone's ever smoked. And I can now price that at $45 or $50, right? So that's a lot of it, you know. And for us, we never set out to be the Coca-Cola of cannabis, because to your point, the moment you do that, there's no way you can maintain the QC. There's absolutely no, there's a limitation to your scale, right? You know, people ask us, are you guys going to do two-story grows and stuff like that? No, because if I do a two-story grow, and if you know anything about cultivation, the airflow is not going to hit the canopy equally, right? My guys who are on scissor lifts now watering and tending and curing and trimming plants that are, you know, 15 feet in the air, there's no way they can have the same attention to detail and eyes on the plants as they can if everything was linear on one floor, right? And, you know, those are just some basic elements of cultivation that right off the bat, yes, could we have twice as much production in the same square footage? Absolutely. But our QC will go down inevitably, and that's not something that we're pursuing, you know?
When you look at Golden State, you know, obviously branded for the Golden State, California, being an East Coast person, we see New York, New Jersey starting to open up, going medical. I think New York's probably going to go recreational extremely soon. Same with New Jersey. Florida's going to go. What's your expansion looking like?
Yeah, so the funny thing is, a Golden State, the branding, we definitely are a legacy California brand, and we wanted to pay homage and let everybody know that we didn't just show up yesterday and say we want to be in the cannabis game. Like, we've been doing this for a decade. My cultivation team created Zookies 5 years ago. You know, they've been here, and, you know, they've grown from the black market to the gray market to the medical market to now, like, you know, being the brains behind what we do in the cultivation. So we've been around. But a Golden State to me really is what I believe is cannabis. It's a state of mind, right? It's individual, it's relative, and it has to be inclusive. You know, like, what is your Golden State might be different from my Golden State, but we can still share in the love and enjoyment of premium cannabis. And so that's really where the name comes from. In terms of, like, multi-state expansion, our primary focus right now is New Jersey. We applied for a New Jersey license. I grew up in New Jersey. We work very closely with Senator Cory Booker. We've been, you know, we are very involved in helping write some of the legislation for New Jersey. You know, my mom was an inner city pediatrician for 40 years. So for me, there's a personal drive to be able to bring legal cannabis to New Jersey and use that to create social justice. Like, it's just a passion for me, right? Next, definitely New York. I have my eyes on Connecticut. And we're looking at some opportunities in Arizona as well right now.
Do you see the California brand as being the benchmark across the United States as new emerging markets come online?
Yeah, I think, you know, California cannabis is no different than California wine, right? Like, we're the birthplace of real high-end cannabis, and you can go anywhere. You know, I was just in Europe, and I somehow accidentally stumbled upon some Golden State there. And, you know, everybody started asking me, is this California cannabis? Is this from California? Is this California? Is this Cali weed? Like, everybody around the world knows California is cannabis. So I do believe that brands in this nascent industry are going to be born here, right? The tricky part of this is, you know, if I were to license a Golden State to someone else in another state, they're not going to grow it the way we do. Like, they're just not. Like, I can't trust them to do that. So that's why we're really focused on, you know, collaborations, partnership, building vertical businesses in other states. We have not done a licensing deal. I'm not saying it's off the table, but again, for me, we're never going to sacrifice quality, and I'm never going to let my brand, you know, degrade because it's in someone else's hands now just so we make more money. Like, that's not what we're about. But I do think, you know, the know-how, the intellectual property, the best of the best guys are here. Right. You know, like, yeah, you know, somebody called me this morning and was talking about some $50 million project in Massachusetts. That's awesome. Like, there's a lot of people with a lot of money. And there's a lot of people with a lot of money who want to make even more money in cannabis. But, like, where were they 2 years ago, right? Like, where were they 5 years ago? These are probably the people voting to not make cannabis legal, right? Unfortunately, these are also the guys winning licenses in limited license markets, right? Like, this is the entire problem with it.
Sadly,
yeah. And so, you know, when I hear that, and there's not enough skilled growers out there, right? And there's not enough skilled growers in the legal market, and there's not enough skilled growers in the legal market that can run a commercial operation. There's a lot of different variables required to do that, right? Beyond just being an awesome garage grower or hoop house grower or, like, things like that, right? You're talking about testing, you're talking about no pesticides, you're talking about QC, you're talking about commercial volume, you're talking about managing teams, you're talking about all of these other variables. There's not hundreds of these guys. So I don't think there's enough guys being exported out of California and running operations in other states. So you know, you can connect the dots. There's no way the type of flower that's being grown here or products that are being made here in other states.
Well, you know, is it possibility of federal legalization within the next 5, 10, mm-hmm. maybe 15 years? If that happens and they open up interstate commerce, some of those will kind of go away because then you can export your California-grown mm-hmm. cannabis to other states. You did mention Europe and you finding a gold state out there. I go to Amsterdam every single year. It's kind of interesting to see Cali strains priced at 35, 40 mm-hmm. euro gram versus their homegrown, but again, it's because of the quality.
Yeah.
Do you see if we open up legalization here, a possibility of exporting California cannabis overseas to the European markets? And if so, do we then launch a benchmark for the world?
Yeah, I mean, I sure hope so, right? I think, look, not getting super political here, I hope federal legalization happens. I hope it doesn't happen so soon that it just ruins the industry, right? You know, that's one of the scariest things, right? And with a lot of these states, the way they issue licenses, like, you can't easily reverse some of the bad decisions that are being made at a bureaucratic level, right? And that's when the game changes, when so much big money comes in, when it becomes so commercial that it just pushes everybody else out. And this massive opportunity in front of us, this massive opportunity to do good, just gets wasted, right? True. So I like baby steps. I like, you know, incremental growth, the right people scaling, the right technology being grown and scaled, you know, QC being really the focus of it. And then, you know, I think over time, then people move into other states. Maybe, like we said, licensing deals happens, or people, you know, get merged with MSOs, and some of that IP or brand IP gets moved around. But then ultimately, yeah, once it becomes federally legal, I do think that, again, like California wine, California cannabis is always going to be California cannabis. And the bottom line is, we're the biggest legal cannabis market in the world. So I don't think you're going to see the same developments in other states.
Sure.
You know, you could have a vineyard in the middle of West Virginia, and, you know, that's awesome, but there's no way they're producing, you know, Russian River Valley, you know, Cabernet, right? So I think it's very much going to be the same thing.
Well, you know, let's go back to baby steps then.
Yeah.
Let's take it to the Safe Banking Act. Coming from a banking background, Safe Banking Act passed the House, doesn't really have much of a chance of passing the Senate. But do you see that as a good, that the fact that you had a federal cannabis bill actually pass Congress in one portion, do you see that as a hopeful step for federal banking?
I do. I think any one of these legislature steps forward, you know, that's positive is good, right? Because it's just getting this more and more on the national stage, getting politicians to get behind it. You know, Cory Booker's Marijuana Policy Act was a great one. You know, the Farm Bill, you know, although hemp is also very relevant. You know, the Safe Banking Act is relevant. You know, these are all, again, these are baby steps in the right direction, you know. It's ludicrous that we don't have a viable banking solution. You know, it's ludicrous, right?
It's dangerous,
it's ludicrous. To your point, it adds a criminal element, it opens up potential. Like, it just, again, this is that bureaucratic disconnect, right? Like, if you really want this to succeed, then invest in making it succeed, you know? And if you don't know how to do that, pump the brakes and spend the time so the people learn how to do this. Resource up the agencies that police and govern and license. You know, you have to do all these things. You know, resource up to shut down black market and dispensaries, you know. Find a banking solution. Only if you do all of these things do these state industries succeed, right? Otherwise, all you're doing is creating an opportunity for other people on the other side of the argument to be like, whoa, this was a huge mistake. Like, it's not working. It's a mistake. Blah, blah, blah. We need to stop this. We need to reverse this. Like, that's not what we need, and that's not what we want, right?
Well, what do you think the future of the industry is then? You know, you guys are exploding here in California. You're looking at potentially going to the East Coast. As far as the overall industry is, as it is now and as it will be in the next 5 years, where do you see the pathway?
So, you know, I think that there's going to be Hall of Flowers was, like, crazy, right? Like, first of all, kudos to those guys. They did an amazing event. Really, really well done. I met amazing people. A lot of good business was done there, especially for us. So I can personally say we really enjoyed ourselves there. And I'm excited to be a part of it next year. And so, like, you know, I think those type of innovation changes, that, like all of that, it's positive. Seeing, you know, where it's concerning is there are so many brands there, you know, like hundreds of new brands. And so inevitably, you know, when you see that, you see how much money is being invested into this space. You know, if you're in the space, you understand that most of those brands, 8 out of 10 of them, don't really produce or control anything, right? There's no way they can all survive. There's going to be a shakeup, right? You saw this in Colorado, you saw this in Oregon, you saw this in Washington. Like, the cost of doing business, the cost of regulations, the cost of compliance, it's so taxing, it's so strenuous.
Well, do you see more of as roll-ups being the strategy, or do you see more as like the Valley, say 10 years ago, just everybody attacking everybody and everybody collapsing? Like,
so
what do you see?
I see a lot of roll-ups, I see a lot of consolidations, I see a lot of people unfortunately going out of business, right? And you know, the writing's on the wall, this happened in other states, you know. You know, inevitably brands are going to go out of business, right? Because they're not going to be able to protect or secure their supply chain. A lot of these guys producing, you know, low quality or mid quality product, which is a lot of the state, you know, they're really in a commoditization war, because you do have the guys that are building million square foot warehouses and stuff like that. And those guys, they're not passionists, you know, they're not like a small farmer that has a, you know, a nice greenhouse and grows some good product. Like, they're massive operations, and they're going to push prices so low, and they're all about volume, and they're going to hurt a lot of people, right? So I think all of those are inevitable parts of the growth cycle, but I do think a lot of really good businesses will come out of it. A lot of brands will do well. A lot of really good operators will succeed, and, you know, use that as opportunity to grow. And hopefully at the end, there'll be more good operators than not good operators left, if you know.
Right, fingers crossed.
Yeah, fingers crossed. But for us, I think, you know, we're just riding that wave. Like, we don't really focus on the noise around us. We have blinders. We've built a really, really nice vertical business here in California. We're scaling on every single business. We've been profitable after 9 months of operation. And so for us, it's just, you know, in the immediate future, it's more brands, right? We're launching a lot more. We just launched another brand. We have a few more down the pipeline. You know, it's more SKUs, it's more products, right? Obviously, there's a lot of negative press around vape, so we'll see what happens in the vape space. But, you know, once that shakes out, and hopefully the FDA doesn't group cannabis vaporization in the same they do like tobacco vaporization, but once the best operators survive, we very much look to participate and work with the best manufacturers.
Well, I mean, take a look at VapeGate. Yeah. You know, we have a situation where they don't really know what's causing it. Do you see a potential push towards users coming back to flower as a result of that, since, you know, concentrates was kind of the fastest growing portion?
Yeah, I think so. You know, we had a lot of pressure from investors to get into vape and stuff like that early, and I always took the stance that I didn't want to do that, because I believe that flower was the fundamental building block of all other cannabis products. And if we could build and be known for producing the best flower, then at the right measured time, when we had the right intellectual property, the right partners to then do oils and edibles and so forth, we would. And then the consumers would know that, hey, anything these guys released, anything that came from a Golden State or other brands, would be held to that same standard, right? I do see more of a push in people coming back to flower. You know, what scares me is like this negative press, how it can hurt the industry as a whole, right? But again, this is why we have to be careful, like, because there are a lot of bad operators that really just care about making a ton of money and don't care about anything else. And, you know, that eventually, unfortunately, gets passed to the consumer, and then it hurts everyone, right? So, like, all you can kind of do is, like, push your peers to, like, give a shit, if you will.
It's true. And you know, as the consumer becomes more and more intelligent, the consumer is kind of understanding more about the entourage effect, the interaction of cannabinoids with terpenes. You know, so that coupled with vaporization, you know, the whole problem with people dying, I think will help move people back to flower, as well as the social aspect. Do you see the consumer market becoming more intelligent, not just as a good thing for obviously the consumer, but do you see that as a good thing necessarily for the industry, giving you
for
guys
sure.
a pathway?
Yeah, listen, education is everything, right? Like, it's no different in the evolution and the maturity of the food industry, right? And what happened to fast food and why people should eat cleaner. It's the same thing about what happened in tobacco and the harms. Like, education is power. And so in cannabis, it's no different. Education and educated consumers force operators in the industry to do better work. And if you're not going to do better work, then consumers aren't going to buy your products. And so, like, over time, that maturation alone should create a higher quality cannabis industry across the country. For us, you know, I shouldn't say I hate, but, like, when people call us luxury, you know, that's not what we are. Like, we didn't set out to be the luxury cannabis brand or blah, 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 the Hermes of cannabis. Like, that's not what we are. Like, we truly are farmers market cannabis, right? And so for me, it's all about education. When somebody's like, why is a Golden State $70 or $75? It's like, well, it's proprietary genetics. It's, you know, snow melt water coming into our facility at 44 degrees. That's the cleanest, purest water being put into any cultivation facility. We don't do RO. We don't do any purification, you know, and like, this is plants. Like, if you don't have clean water, what do you have, right? And that really shows, even in terms of like the explosive color profile of our product, it comes from that cold water, right? If you come and tour our facilities, you'll see that like everything is meticulous. There's no water on the ground. There's no dirt on the ground. Every plant is like a vibrant green. The canopy's even. You know, like we change the bulbs every other harvest. Like we're so meticulous on cleaning air filters, changing air filters, HEPA filters. It's like all of that has a correlated cost, but like that's what we invest into the production of our, you know, cannabis. And like that gets, you know, transferred to the consumer, and like that inevitably comes at a slightly higher cost. But if you care about what you're putting in your body, just like you care about what you eat or your yoga or whatever, then you should care equally about what kind of cannabis you use, right?
Of course. Especially with VaporKit, you should care about what you're consuming. And with the mass growth of, say, Sia Green quality cannabis, a lot of people don't really know, you know, what they're necessarily consuming, just grabbing butt off the shelf. But for the connoisseur, you know, that's what we want. We want the organic stuff. So on strains that you currently have versus strains that you're looking at in the future, when you're doing your research and development for your genetics, what are the future ideas that you maybe have for cannabis?
Yeah, so for us, we don't follow consumer trends. We really try to be the ones that innovate what consumers are doing, right? Like, here in Los Angeles and SoCal, you know, I saw the shift in kind of the demographic, right? You had the creation of Silicon Beach. You had more people coming here from the East Coast. You had more tech companies popping up, right? Like, people, you know, SoCal has always had this, like, heavy indica vibe, you know, or perception. But the population has changed. And you see that now in dispensaries, but we saw that, you know, just from like understanding economics and social trends, that like the people are different. These people probably want like an energetic sativa. And so we've skewed heavy into like really, really, you know, diverse, robust sativas, from like a really, really nice 17-18% sativa. And again, we don't stress about THC percents, because you know there's so much more to cannabis than THC percents, right? And that's part of the education process. So from that all the way up to like our super racy woods and things like that are nearing 28-31%, you know? And that's not right for everybody, but we try to have products that are available for everyone, and maybe that's for different moods and stuff, right? And then for our indicas, we just try to have, you know, a changing menu of just really, really like age old, really purple, really, you know, a lot of deep cannabinoids and stuff like that, a lot of terpenes, you know, that are just relaxing, sedative, like the body high, and you know. And then we'll play around, you know, we're always testing, we're doing a ton of R&D, like our whole team loves this. And so we're just kind of testing and crossing and popping seeds and doing all that stuff. And then we see what we like, we do R&D tests on everything, and then we'll start shifting around, right? And then we'll be talking to bud tenders and stuff like that, and just really try to bring things out that they're like new stuff for them.
We would like to thank Nishant for his time and being on today's episode. You can learn more about A Golden State by visiting them online at agoldenstate.com. Thanks for listening, and make sure to tune into the next episode of Conversations in Cannabis, an MRR podcast.